I think it is clear to everyone here that there was a time, not too long ago, when America was regarded as a great nation, a prosperous nation, a free nation, a godly nation, far above any other. But it's also clear, even to the average person, that America has been failing in these areas. As with the failing business, what's the first thing that people look at? It's the management. And America, like a business, is suffering from mismanagement. We all know that the majority of things talked about today or complained about relate to government or how things are managed. That is because nothing will affect the life of people more than the government under which they live. If we are to have a future in America, then we need to plan and concern ourselves with a future of government in America. And we may be sorry in the future if we have not done so now. Up to now, most of us have been planning because we see the signs of things about us, the problem. People have been storing up food to make sure they have enough food because there may be times when you may not be able to get it. People have been preparing for financial collapse by buying gold and silver. We've been storing up or buying guns in case of unlawful invasion, martial law tactics, and so forth. Some people have moved out of the city to avoid the crime and violence, which may be inevitable pretty soon. Why all of these things are of importance to prepare us in our personal lives? We need to also plan for the future of our nation, our race, and our posterity as a whole, and not just our personal lives. If these things are to be of primary importance to us, our nation, our race, and our posterity, then we need to concern or focus on government in the future. After all, is not government the reason that we are planning in all these other areas of personal concern? We thus need to have a plan for doing something in regard to what affects us most, and that's government. And with all the complaining that goes on, you think that we would have some plan in this area. The problem then is being that of bad government, corrupt government, and so forth. Now, there's actually only three things that can be done about bad or corrupt government in the physical realm. One, you can leave that nation or state in which the government exists. You can try to change or alter the bad aspects of that government. Or you can have that government eliminated in somehow. Let's look at each of these possibilities. First of all, to move out. Well, this has been a common practice. The Israelites moved out of Egypt and avoided that government. The pilgrims moved out of Europe and avoided that bad government. Some people have moved out of states, out of cities, to avoid the corruption and so forth. About a month ago, I was up in northern Idaho, and a lot of the land up there is increasing in value because people are coming from the sewer holes of California, LA and San Francisco and so forth, to avoid all the problems, crime, racial tension and so forth that exist there. But one of the first things I encountered there was a woman, an elderly woman, was arrested in her home for selling Avon products. Somebody to spy her out, to set her up to buy the product, and apparently they have some city ordinance there, and you can't sell something out of your home. Now that's one of the biggest acts of tyranny I've ever experienced. So you can move, and you can get to better funds, better situations, but you're not going to avoid the problem totally. And besides, for us to move now, it's really only going to do something for us personally. It's not going to do something for us on a national level that will affect our posterity or race. This leads us with two options: to change the bad aspects or to eliminate. As far as changing, there are literally hundreds of things that are wrong with government today. It would be a monumental task to try to change them all. Many things are just too deeply rooted. They gain strength by precedent. I want to read you a quote that James Madison said in regards to the American colonists who formed this nation. He said, "The freedom of America did not wait till usurped power had strengthened itself by exercise and entangled the question in precedence. They saw all the consequences in the principle, and they avoided the consequences by denying the principle. As soon as they saw a problem emerge, whether it's taxation or taking of arms or whatever, they immediately did something about it. We have problems today that have been so entangled in question and have gained such precedent, we're never going to change them. When political problems become so entrenched as they are today, there's no correcting them by the ordinary political processes, courts and juries and elections. We have to understand that things like courts and juries, elections, are for the purpose of maintaining the political structure as it was originally established, not for regaining it back once it's been corrupted, debauched, taken over, conquered, or anything like that. It never has been used in that manner and never will. But here's another point we have to look at. To think that we can change or alter the government today is asking for something that has never been done in all of history. And that is for a corrupt government or leader to admit that they are wrong. Just think about this. When in history has this ever happened? Corrupt governments and leaders never admit they are wrong because they stand to lose too much in doing so. They'll lose power, they'll lose control, they'll lose revenue, they'll lose credibility, they'll lose even their own existence. A while ago I was talking to a retired judge in Minnesota about our motor vehicle tax, and I gave him a brief I wrote up about it. And I showed about 7 different reasons why that thing is totally invalid and has been for 70 years. And after he read it, he admitted that it was. But he said, it would be too catastrophic politically and financially to recognize that. Besides, I would have lost my job if I had done so. So we can imagine if they admitted that, one thing is that if taxes are unlawful, taxes that are unlawfully assessed and taken in have to be paid back. So there's about $1 billion that would have to be paid back to people. Plus, then you gotta ask the question, well, if the motor vehicle tax is wrong, what about the sales tax? What about the income tax? What about the property tax? And maybe they've done something wrong in regards to registration. What about driver's license? You see, it's just a toppling effect. If they ever admit that, it's just gonna all cave in. I don't think Bill Clinton is ever going to admit that he's wrong about anything. It would be political suicide 100 times over. He and the establishment just wouldn't stand to lose too much. You know, did King George ever admit to wrongdoing? Did he sometime later on say, well, I see this is the law, I guess I was wrong, or they were right? Never happened. He never did that. In fact, it's that way to this day. In 1976, during the year of our bicentennial, Queen Elizabeth, on behalf of the British Crown, formally forgave the American colonists for rebelling against the Crown. Now, you gotta think how stupid that is. She's saying, well, you guys are wrong, but you're forgiven now. she can't admit it, because if they did something wrong with America, well, maybe the British Crown did something wrong with Canada or Australia or New Zealand. Maybe they're doing something wrong with Ireland or Scotland or England. No people can say, well, you admitted doing this wrong thing here, and you're doing it here, so we're going to claim our independence from you too. You see, they stand to lose too much. King John never admitted that he did anything wrong until the barons and knights and churchmen came after him with swords and put a sword to his neck, signing Magna Carta, admitting that he did do something wrong. But no sooner was that sword removed that he recanted upon about his wrongdoing, and he continued off doing it. And it's that way in so many things. I think it's just like what Ken Anderson was talking about in the medical profession. You can show them what they're doing is wrong. You can show them that this way is vastly superior. But those doctors and medical establishments stand to lose too much the control and the money if they ever admit what they do is wrong. And you can find that in any area at all. Those in government today will never admit they're acting unlawfully. The second they do, they stand to lose what they worked for and desired and built up. Just look how hard it is for an individual to admit that they're wrong, when all they're going to suffer is a boom legal. But governments or political leaders stand to lose money, power, and their very existence. So knowing how extremely unlawful the government is today, you seek the impossible task by asking to change it. This leads us to the third alternative, to somehow have the government eliminated or abolished. This can occur in several different ways. One way that it has happened a lot in history is by war. Hundreds of examples where a government has been eliminated, overthrown, defeated by war. In the Bible, God eliminated the Israel nation, the Assyrian nation, and others by bringing a military force against them and eliminating. So wars, revolutions, coups have always eliminated governments. Another way governments have come to an end is by their deterioration due to their corruption, their immoral positions and systems, and just basically ungodliness. They, like Rome, Greece, have all fallen down. God is showing that this is the way to run a nation. You do something opposite, it's going to collapse. So we could probably wait around and wait for the government in America to reach its destined fate of being deteriorated, but usually it takes some force to push over what's left. They never deteriorate to nothing. Like Rome, it had to be pushed over by the Germanic tribes. Sometimes making a declaration of independence has severed people from government, thereby kind of eliminating, as with America and Scotland. But also that usually requires some type of force to maintain it. I think right now there's something going on in Texas, the Texas Republic. They're trying to claim that they never seceded the soil to the U.S. and therefore they have an independence. I think there's something very interesting going on that I should look into. You can imagine the ramifications of that. We actually have about 10 times more reason to separate or eliminate government by independence of it than the American colonies ever did with England. I think we have a lot more law and legal precedents to back us up than they had too. Another way to eliminate the present government or any government is to establish a new frame of government. And this can be done with a town, a city, a state, a nation. How do you do that? They'll just draft a new charter, a new constitution. When a new government is established, the old government automatically ceases. When the U.S. Constitution was drafted and ratified, the government under the Articles of Confederation ceased to exist. They didn't have to make any declaration, it was just an implied thing. Further, all of the laws and policies and agencies of the old government also ceased to exist. Thus, we don't have to worry about correcting thousands of illegal procedures, unlawful acts, and oppressive agencies. They just come to an end when a new government is established. This is hardly a new concept. Cities and towns do this all the time. They'll come up with a new charter for the city, and they got a new government. Many states have had several different state constitutions. Georgia has had at least about 10 different constitutions. Of 10 different governments. Thus, an objective in attempting to institute a new government is not just in actually doing so, but also to dislodge the current power structure. See, the problem is not the concept of government, but the corrupt bureaucratic persons who control it from behind the scenes. Just the potential success of establishing a new government would by itself serve the purpose of shaking the pillars of the current power structure. It will threaten their power base, their institutions, their financial system, the socialistic laws. Imagine what would happen if just one state would establish a new government and all of a sudden there was no abortion allowed, no welfare, no misery, no socialistic system. The powers that would be would go into a panic. They would force them to act rashly and to do something unlawful, thus exposing their corrupt nature to the public. This is kind of what happened with Kennedy when was doing things with the money issue and the Vietnam War. He was doing something that was upsetting the status quo, the establishment system. And it forced them to do something drastic. And that act has convinced many people that there is a conspiracy against the people of this land. And you can count on the establishment system to do something wrong or unlawful, because that's what criminals do. They do things unlawfully. You ever see the way they act, where they have 20 men going against one for something, or where they get all excited when somebody starts talking about government rights, law, militia? Because they're doing something wrong, they're criminals. Otherwise, they wouldn't be acting like that if they were acting lawfully. Criminals live in constant fear of being caught and punished. And that's why you can count on them doing something rash. It doesn't matter what type of government you would even set up. Because whatever type you would, it would put them in a panic. Because they would not have control of that government. That's one of the reasons why we go in all these foreign wars. Because there's some nation out there that gets a little bit too independent. Somebody that wants to become a dictator or something like that. And we have to go over there to the UN and straighten them out. So that the powers that be can have their system where it is, because if they have an independent nation over there, they got a problem. And we can do the same thing. Some have proposed to do this in our small communities, and that's good, forming townships and that. But doing it on a state or national level will affect more people and affect more problems. We have an absolute right to establish new government and abolish the old. What does it say in the Declaration of Independence? That governments are instituted to secure unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, to institute new government laying its foundation on such principles. George Washington, in his farewell address, said, "The basis of our political system is the right of the people to make and to alter their constitutions of government." James Kent, in his Commentaries on American Law, said, "The principle of self-preservation," now that's an important principle to remember, we can do things based upon the principle of self-preservation. "The principle of self-preservation and the right of every community to freedom and happiness gave sanction to the separation of the people of the colonies from all allegiance to the British crown. When a government established over any people becomes incompetent to fulfill its purposes, or destructive to the essential ends for which it was instituted, it is the right of the people, founded on the law of nature and the reason of mankind, and supported by the soundest authority and some very illustrious precedent, to throw off such government and provide new guards for their future security." So he said, we've got such a basic right to do this. "The election of a new government, state or national, would have a devastating impact on the system as we know it, losing their secrecy, their power, their control and revenue. Such a measure could force the confrontation, which many of us, I think, is inevitable, between the people and the plutocratic powers. The people involved in such a measure would be acting perfectly peaceably, perfectly lawfully. But it will force the corrupt powers that be to make the first move, to make a drastic measure, to fire the first shot, so to speak. And when it does, it becomes a trespasser and can be resisted. The rash act would be obvious to most people. Thus, any force used against it would be more readily understood by the public. But the objective then is to expose the corrupt and unlawful nature of government and the hidden powers that control it to the public in general. But no matter what lies in the days ahead, I think one thing is inevitable, and that is that this government that exists now is going to come to an end. History teaches us that. The Bible teaches us that. Whether it's by war, or decaying the crap, or a new government, or whatever, I don't know how it's going to come to an end, I know it's going to come to an end. But what will we do when that day arrives? We may someday find ourselves in the same situation that the Israelites faced in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. The nation had deteriorated to a state of ungodliness, the government destroyed, the heathen took control, and the people put into captivity. Sound familiar? Then, by the providence of God, the yoke of the heathen was broken. The Babylonian government over them came to an end. The land restored to the people. They had to start all over with the government or management of the nation. The walls in the temple had to be rebuilt. The law had to be reestablished and promulgated. A plan of national defense had to be instituted. They had an illegal alien problem and had to separate the strangers out from among them. And it says they set up magistrates and judges to guide the civil affairs and judge the people. Thus the nation of Israel was reestablished. Americans will someday, perhaps soon, be in the same situation. Since the present political system is destined to end, so why not plan for that day now? What are we going to do in that time? Or what can we do and what can we not do? Do we have the wisdom and knowledge in matters of law and government to run the nation? Do we have the qualified people who could set up and run a government? People who could be mayors and judges, sheriffs, governors? Sometimes I think we would come up way short in that area. And that's a dreadful thought. It's probably more dreadful of a thought than continuing on with what we have. Now, when I ask a lot of people of what we're going to do, what we should do, they say, well, follow the laws of God. Well, that's all well and noble, but that's very superficial, very incomplete. You see, the one problem with the laws of God is that they're not self-executing. You can proclaim the laws of God and publish them, but you're still going to have kidnapping and rape. The thief is not going to return double of what he stole on his own accord. The murderer is not going to jump off a cliff and execute himself. Disputes and arguments are not going to resolve themselves. Human nature does not become godly just because the laws of God are published. There has to be a mechanism for instituting and enforcing the laws of God and for judging and punishing violations thereof. The American colonists realized this when they came here because one of the first things they did was set up some form of government or civil political body to govern themselves and to institute the laws of God. So organized government in some form is necessary. And it's not going to happen by itself. It's not automatic. Now I think we can learn some lessons from our current situation under this type of government we live. I hope we're learning some lessons, because I would hate to think that we're going to end up repeating these things. And that's what would happen if we don't. Even if we get rid of the evil aliens, it still doesn't matter, because a lot of these problems are driven by human nature. And human nature is not going to change, which means a lot of the problems we have are going to continue on, unless we learn. So in some ways, I think this corrupt government system has been a blessing to us, because it has exposed certain problems that we would not probably normally have recognized. You know, an incorporated church 100 years ago wouldn't have been a problem. You wouldn't have noticed anything. There wouldn't have been no governmental attack against it. So what can we learn from this government? What can we do to improve government in the future for ourselves and our posterity? I've jotted down a few things that I think that we can improve upon or change. One is that I think we should define a few terms. There's some court cases that have waged on and on and on trying to describe certain terms like citizen. Citizen is kind of a new concept to America, because before 1776, everybody was just a subject. Who's a citizen? What is a citizen? Who can become a citizen? Well, only white people could become citizens originally. And most of the court cases earlier had said that. But the question still rages on about citizenship. Another term, religious liberty. Now, what is that? Is it all religions can practice their religion here? Well, in rural America, only Christians could. So you have to, maybe a better term would be Christian liberty. Then we got this problem with lawyers. What do we do with lawyers? No. I think we all have the thought of this concept of lawyers, but yet when you got a legal problem, you want to run to some expert. You know, I can't know everything about every aspect of law, neither can you. We've always had lawyers or jurists that knew things about law in detail. The problem with lawyers is that they live off of crime or violation of law. And therefore, they like to have more law. So you let those people in the legislature, and what they're going to do, they're going to pass more laws. Or they're going to make more things unlawful, or more things which can be sued against, you know, like having different rules of liability and so forth. Somebody spilling a hot cup of coffee on them is something that could never have existed 100 years ago, but the lawyers have changed the rules of liability and so forth. I think that, you know, having lawyers without a license would be a big step, because then they wouldn't have any type of connection to the state and so forth. Another thing I would change is not allowing anyone to serve in government who is not a natural born citizen. When the Constitution was framed, a lot of people existing in were foreign born. But that's not our situation today. The problem was, when you have somebody who's born in the nation, they have a better understanding of what the law is, what things are, where they should be, and so forth. But now we have so many foreigners in government, you know, people like Brzezinski can't even speak the language, for crying out loud, and Kissinger and so forth. Another thing I would eliminate is the concept of sovereign immunity. Sovereign immunity is based upon the maxim that the king can do no wrong. So whatever the king did, you know, if he intruded onto your property or something like that, or took something, did something wrong, violated the law, you could not sue him. He was immune. Now, there is no concept of sovereign immunity in the Constitution or any of the state constitutions. It was put on the books, I guess, by the courts. And they said that it exists on our government like it existed on the king. Now, I've always thought this a very bizarre concept, because when you read the Declaration of Independence, what do you see? A list of things that they claim the king did that were wrong. And then we come along and say, well, we're going to have that same principle established. The government can do no wrong. It doesn't make any sense. It's also interesting to note that under the Saxon kings before the Norman conquest, the king or queen could be sued. And also, you know, look back on the Israelite kings, you know, like David. Was he immune from his wrongdoing? No, he wasn't. He had no sovereign immunity. I think that concept is an affront to the Declaration of Independence and should never exist. Most of the time, you would not have to sue the government. You could sue the individual, because the individual, once he does something unlawful, he is a trespasser and he can be sued as such. But there are times when the government should be able to be sued. When it's a governmental problem, when the government collectively does something wrong, perhaps like in Waco, that it should be sued. Another concept I would eliminate is that of eminent domain. This is another relic of the monarchy that we carried over. Under this concept, the king could assert his domain over any portion of the soil. So if you had a wooded area, a small forest or something, and the king decided he needed that to build a fort or a castle, he could just take it, basically. Go through a few legal procedures, and it was his. And we've adopted that concept in this country. Whenever the government wants something, they can just take it. They can take any property they want, and all they have to do is give you the fair market value for it, and that's it. And they did this with the railroads back in the 1800s. The railroads contracted with the U.S. government somehow to make these railways throughout the country, and the railroads, under the concept of eminent domain, took farms and homes from people. And that's what stirred up a lot of people like the James brothers and so forth against the railroads. Okay, another concept that I would change is that of which is called administrative law. We can never allow government to establish or create any boards, commissions, agencies, bureaus, trusts, and so forth, which have any governmental or quasi-governmental functions. This is the mode by which government has grown. Now, this is a rather new concept. I'll read you something here from a law text called Corpus Juris Secundum, Volume 73, under the title of Public Administrative Law and Procedure. It says the term administrative law is of comparatively recent origin and has not been subject to precise definition by the courts. Administrative law is not one of the traditional recognized parts of the common law. Its growth has been accelerated by the multiplication in recent years of the number of governmental administrative agencies. Now, they had the same problem back with King George. Look at the Declaration of Independence, that he, King George, had erected a multitude of new officers and new officers to harass our people and to eat out their substance. Sound familiar? They never envisioned the concept of administrative law for all these agencies as they exist today. And it's something that's really a 20th century problem, something accelerated by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But when you establish these things, there's something that's very different from common law concepts or other concepts of government. They're not something established by the people. They're established by government, government creating government. Now, another provision somewhat related to this is not to allow any portion of government to create and establish other portions of government. This is usually done by the legislature, like creating judicial bodies. And we have this right in the U.S. Constitution that allows Congress to create judicial bodies. And when it does, that judicial body oftentimes is usually answerable to the legislator. We also have this problem with the legislator creating executive portions of government, as with police and ATF and all this other stuff. The concept of police is just absolutely repugnant to everything that's American. When they first established state constitutions, they put in the concept of sheriff, and they had the sheriff elected for 3 years and would not allow them to continue for another 3 years. That's how much they were afraid of the executive thing. But now look at what you got with police. They're not elected. A police is a creature of statute, as many courts have said. They're more of a military type of thing. And there's a case that said that they're military in nature. They have sergeants and lieutenants and captains and so forth. Go to police academies that are like military academies. There's military funerals when some police officer dies. It's a military force over it. And we should regard the whole concept as something just totally repugnant. America will not have presidents or governors appoint judges. Many times in the past, this has been used for political corruption. President Grant used it to appoint two judges to the Supreme Court who he knew would uphold the Legal Tender Act. And those are the two types of judges that he picked. Those are the qualifications he wanted. And therefore, the legal tender, which was previously held unconstitutional, is now held constitutional. And that was a real black eye on the Supreme Court when that happened. And we all know of Franklin Roosevelt's plan to pack the court. When a president or a governor appoints a judge, he becomes basically a political crony of whoever appointed him. I think there's a lot of things also that can be changed in regards to criminal prosecution, like having time limits as to when the government can institute a suit and from when it has to start the suit. Just saying, you know, a speedy trial is something that doesn't mean much, you know. If you say 30 or 40 days, make it specific, then it has meaning. But I also make a declaration that the common law and the common law crimes shall not be abolished. I don't know whether legislators ever thought that they could do this, but they just took it upon themselves and did this. With the common law, you can practically run a nation. All of the law of God is basically incorporated in, and so very much more. Rules of evidence, rules of procedure, liability, just dozens and dozens and dozens of things. You could practically eliminate the need for a legislative body if you have the common law crimes. So you can see why they wanted to abolish common law crimes. Under the common law, when somebody was arrested, they had to be taken immediately to a judge. But the Supreme Court said that, oh, you can wait 48 hours. They have no authority to say 48 hours. Anymore, if they can say 48 hours, they can say 148 hours. And the courts are the ones that said, well, yeah, the legislator can change the common law, but the courts can't. But then they've done it with that decree. I would also have key executive positions such as Attorney General and Secretary of State elected instead of appointed. Those positions are too critical, and I think we see, you know, how those people just become cronies of the president or governor. And you might also decide, like in city and states, to have an enumerated government like the U.S. is, instead of just open-ended. You know, a lot of times the courts have thought that the states have unlimited power because of this. I would prohibit political parties. Political party, when you have a political party, you have a mechanism for controlling the process and modes of what the political thing is going to be, what we're going to have, and how they control elections and everything else. And people got to be part of political parties or part of political action committees and so forth. And they set rules, and you got to follow those rules and so forth. Bob Dole recently quoted George Washington about not having factions within our midst. And he's part of the biggest type of faction there is, you know, the political parties we have. They're a real scourge for a free republic. I would also institute, or I should say reinstitute, oaths of office, which require people to believe in God and the Bible, and also a belief in a future state of rewards and punishment. This is one type of oath that people always had to take in the colony. You got to think how wise this is, because you get somebody in office who does not believe that there is a future state of rewards and punishment. Corruption makes sense. Why not do it? You mean you're only going to be on this earth a little bit more, and that's it. There's not going to be anything else. But you get a man who believes that he's going to be held accountable for what he does, and he's going to be acting very differently. I would also adopt some mode of impeachment, removal from office, and punishment of government officials. Having legislative bodies do this, like the Senate hearing committee, really does nothing. Look at all the acts of treason, usurpation, subversion, malfeasance, and corruption that have gone on. And what have they done about it? Nothing. We do something about land. You want taxes that basically always existed on land, except back in the colonies, it was a different type of tax. It was a property tax, which didn't impose any type of condition or restriction on the use of land. But if you don't want it, you got to put it in the state constitution. It also would not allow anyone to own land who is not a citizen, or a corporation that's not wholly owned by citizens. We basically have a foreign invasion going on here in this country by people buying up land in this country, foreigners, Japanese and so forth. We don't need the permission of government to do any of these things. We don't need permission of courts or Congress or anybody. It's a question of political power and political right. All political power is inherent in the people. Now, I think this question of political power needs to be explained and clarified because it has been misapplied. God has given us authority to enforce laws and judge matters. When he said, you will execute the murderer, and you will do this, and you will do that, he wasn't talking to just Moses or a priest or something. He was talking to the people. That's what he meant by you. In the past, well, we had given up this, of course, this political power to the king. And in recent years, you know, back in our 1776, we took it away from the king. But in the past, the idea of political power is inherent in the people has been distorted by some courts to conclude that the people are all powerful. And thus the state is also, too, because the people have delegated their power to the state. Well, the truth is that all political power which exists is inherent in the people. While the people collectively hold political power, the people are limited and restricted. They're limited by the laws of God. They're limited by the laws of nature. They're limited by the common law. In the Declaration of Independence, it says King George violated the Constitution. That Constitution is all this body of laws, maxims, and principles that we sometimes call the common law. So even a written Constitution can be unconstitutional because the people can't do whatever they want. They're limited. We have to get straight the principle of delegation that exists under the law of agency. When you elect somebody, or write a constitution that says this office can exist, we have delegated our political power to that person or office. Now, here's a common quote about political power. It says, a power can never be delegated which the delegating authority itself never possessed. Or another way of saying it, what a person cannot do himself, he cannot do by another. If the people don't have the power to allow sodomy, blasphemy, abortion, kidnapping, theft, murder, usury, fornication, then neither do their agents. A legislator, judge, or governor established by the people cannot authorize such things. But yet, they claim to do so because they thought the people are all powerful. That's the problem with the administrative units. They're not subject to the people, and therefore their power comes from their source. They can do whatever they want. We've often talked about public policy. Well, if enough people want something, then they can just do something and you don't have any rights anymore. The U.S. Supreme Court in 1963 stated, fundamental rights of individuals cannot be infringed because a majority of people choose that it be. There's no concept of mobocracy that exists. It has been held once that due process of law was taken away by a constitutional amendment that the people voted for, and it was held that that amendment was unconstitutional. Well, there are many other things which I think that we can change and improve upon for our nation and our race and posterity. And I hope you'll think about this. I know a lot of Christians are taken away from the political process and they're told not to get involved in it for one reason or another. They say Jesus did nothing political, or Romans 13, or other such things. Well, I hope this has helped you to start thinking and planning about the political future of America, because now is the time to do so, not in the future. Think about it. Thank you.
have received a blessing from the messages on this tape. These tapes make excellent gifts for birthdays, graduations, weddings, anniversaries, or just a friendship gift to bring Bible truths to a friend or relative. When you give the gift of God's truth, both of you will be blessed by it, and it will advance the work of Christ's kingdom. For our current list of books, tapes, and videos, please write to Christian Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 146, Cardwell, Queensland 4849. Thank you.